At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
So there you are, every 2 weeks in your urologist's office, getting your shot of testosterone. And you think to yourself, man, can this needle get any bigger? Or can this nurse's hand get any shakier? It feels like you're giving me a tattoo on my bone. So what's a guy to do?
I guess you either accept the tattoo or you think about switching your form and maybe the urologist prescribes something else.
So if you don't know what to do, check out this podcast. We'll explain options, including subcutaneous testosterone. So if you've ever seen someone with diabetes giving themselves an insulin shot, you too can use a very small needle for your testosterone.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, Just the Basics series. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. And in this series, we give you just the basics. Hopefully still a balanced approach to health and some tools to help with your decision-making along the way. But we speak in common terms so that we're not getting things more confusing than they need to be. Just the basics.
Yeah. In the last Just the Basics episode, we discussed the standard of care and also the cookie cutter TRT clinic standard of care for what happens when you go get TRT. And in this episode, we will discuss what people are currently doing with their testosterone or injectable testosterone. We'll also discuss myths and a truth, and then what should be standard of care in your terms.
Yeah. So as is tradition, we will start off with a meme. This is our second weekly meme. And this is a bit of foreshadowing, actually. So this meme will make more sense as the episode goes on. But here you can see Dr. Kyle Gillette says, "Honey, come look. I found some information all the world's top scientists and doctors missed. And this is unironic. There is actually information that seemingly the authors that reviewed some of these keystone data on injectable testosterone missed."
Yeah, and this is indeed a summary of what it is like in our household. Maddie does not enjoy it when I point this out because it is often, and I talk about this all the time, often on the podcast. But what people are currently doing, we somewhat explained last study. We talked about the secret shopper study that Dr. Fantas, one of our friends and a top urologist, helped author. But a lot of people just prescribe cookie cutter TRT to everyone. Who would have known? Anyways, a lot of people also do Androgel, and a lot of people also prescribe, you know, the classic harpoon injection testosterone, where you have a big old harpoon with a huge needle. And for this, I guess we would have to go to the depot testosterone label and see what it says for dosing, because that's what we do for medications, right?
Traditionally, yes. I mean, if you're looking at most medications, usually it's studied for a specific indication, and it's going to say, you know, give this much, this many times per day, or this often, and usually there's a range there. Sometimes you use more or less of a medication, depending on what you're treating. And the range for just generic testosterone is 200 to 400 milligrams every 2 to 4 weeks. I think that this falls within what is probably the most commonly prescribed protocol, which is probably 200 milligrams every 2 weeks.
Correct.
Just the sheer number of traditional clinics out there and health systems are probably prescribing it this way. In some cases, doing these injections in the office for patients, they come in every other week and get them done.
Yeah. You go into your office and the nurse draws up a syringe that probably looks a lot like this. No, it's your typical quote-unquote testosterone syringe for intramuscular administration. I have a fake body part here. And as you can see, that goes pretty deeply into the fake body part. That would not feel good. It causes quite a bit of tissue damage. And it also leads to some pretty unstable levels.
Yeah. And let's go ahead and, show a comparison of the insulin syringes that can be used for subcutaneous injections.
Here's your 27 or 28 gauge syringe. And with a 27 or 28 gauge syringe, it takes a while to drop. You might have to pull it back and, use your sterile technique, and you got to wait for a while. But after you have it all pulled up, you can see it barely even goes into the subcutaneous tissue there. That's a lot less tissue damage, and it's actually quite easy. With the other syringe, I would have really had to push through. But with this syringe on this realistic skin, you see how easy that goes in? You can inject, and then it comes out particularly easily. So you do not need an auto-injector in order to do this at home. And for our patients that are on subcutaneous testosterone, we train all male and female patients to do this themselves.
Yeah, and intramuscular just means in the muscle. Subcutaneous refers to an injection in the fat, just beneath the surface of the skin. So it's a slightly better way of doing it, especially if we're talking about increases in frequency. But before we get there, here's a myth. This is actually a true story. Pharmacists, I guess, called back our clinic and told the nursing staff, you can't inject testosterone subcutaneously or it will cause an infection, as opposed to injecting intramuscularly where it's impossible to get an infection.
Yeah, that is our myth of the day. Our truth of the day is the converse. It is that subcutaneous testosterone is FDA approved. Xiostat is an example of that. And generic testosterone as well can be safely injected subcutaneously, as many people do now.
Yeah, my plan was to actually call back the pharmacy and ask them to look up a medication for me called Xiostat and see how that's injected. But I didn't get that far. The pharmacy tech was just like, oh, we just need a exception made by the prescriber. And then they were able to go ahead and approve the prescription.
Yeah.
So the truth is, injecting subcutaneous is arguably safer than injecting intramuscularly.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with the depotestosterone label. It should not be given intravenously. So I thought that was funny that it was in the label. But as we mentioned last Just the Basics podcast, don't go by the dosing, which is 50 to 400 every 2 to 4 weeks. One of the advantages to subcutaneous testosterone, which often should be the standard of care, is that it has stable levels compared to infrequently injected intramuscular testosterone. You can see by these graphs here that none of these four options are good, but that is not what the conclusion of the authors of the paper came to.
Yeah. So if you look at these, you would say, well, which one is the least bad? And, your injection once per week, it keeps levels the most stable with the least fluctuation.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting. If you're looking at the units there, that's actually nanomole per liter. So this is not a testosterone level of 80 nanogram per deciliter. This is a testosterone level that's closer to 2,000 nanogram per deciliter where it's peaking.
Yeah.
So that's an aside, and some people will appreciate that. But the authors of the study looked at these four different protocols and decided what?
Quote, the authors conclude that testosterone, enanthate, cypionate would be the same, doses of 200 mg have to be injected every 2 weeks or 300 mg every 3 weeks to guarantee effective substitution therapy.
So that reads to me like they're recommending injections every 2 to 3 weeks. I suppose you can make a case that they just didn't address the data from weekly injections or every 4 week injections. But to me, this reads more like a recommendation, as like, we think this is the best way to do it. Is that your take on it as well?
Yeah, this was a study which is a pretty old study, but it is one that is used to make the dosing recommendations for products like Depo-Testosterone. So this is why this standard of care developed in the first place. It's just antiquated.
Yeah, and this is why the meme makes sense, is because all the experts missed that the more frequently you give the injections, the more stable the levels are, and the better that probably is.
Mm-hmm. Another advantage that subcutaneous low dose or micro dose administrations, you don't necessarily have to be on a lower total weekly dose if you averaged out, but you are on lower doses per administration or per injection, is that there is less conversion to DHT and less spikes, so less erythropoietin, less risk of thick blood. And thick blood is directly correlated, and the process that causes it is directly causatory of venous thromboembolism, which is blood clots. So blood is not as thick, blood pressure does not go up as much, you don't have as much fight or flight drive causing more sleep apnea, and less blood clots. Sounds pretty good. And a lot of those benefits is what sub-Q administration has over cream as well. Less DHT, less estrogen.
Yeah, so when we think of androgenic effects of testosterone, we think of things like oily skin, and acne, and hair loss. And that's typically DHT is responsible for that, I suppose. Given enough testosterone, it could do that itself. But we think of the DHT as being the androgenic side of things, a little bit anabolic, but testosterone being more anabolic, meaning it's building things like bone and lean body mass. So you still get that benefit. Mm-hmm. You don't need the DHT to get the full benefit of testosterone.
It might sound too good to be true, but there are downsides. For example, unlike pellets or unlike pre-filled syringes that the patient injects every couple of weeks, we can't sell this to the patient at a huge margin and make a whole bunch of money off of selling this drug.
Yeah, it is incredibly cheap. Usually you'll get 2,000 milligrams for something like $50 at the pharmacy. Syringes are fairly cheap as well. 100 of them are usually 15 or 20 bucks. And that should last somebody, 20 weeks if they're on an average dose. So you're buying that 2 or 3 times a year. Testosterone is quite cheap, but there are some clinics that are profit-driven and will do, in my opinion, unnecessary surgeries on people, implanting pellets to make extra money when there's really the only upside of pellets over injection is it doesn't require an injection. And with an auto-injector that's commercially available, mm-hmm. I have a hard time seeing any upside at all. My famous quote about pellets is that I might use pellets for convenience in a pet or an animal, but I don't think I would do that to a human being.
Yeah, but that's about accurate. I wish that veterinarians did do testosterone pellets for neutered and spayed dogs more often. I think that that would improve their quality of life. This is the basics, so ignore that. just imagine how well prescribed Xiostid would be, which is the auto injector testosterone, if that drug company sold it to any clinic that wanted it for $20 an injector and the clinic could sell it for $150, because that's what they do with testosterone right now. If they could do a month or 3 months supply like that, then it would be one of the most commonly prescribed meds that there is.
Probably so. Yeah. There's certain legal things I'm sure that come into play there. And the company probably doesn't want the reputation as the med spa testosterone.
They're a small pharma company that's too ethical. Otherwise, they'd be a big pharma company.
Small pharma, ethical pharma. Is that an oxymoron?
Not really. Big ethical pharma might be an oxymoron, but not small ethical pharma. There's a reason why that pharma company is still small and still struggling. It's because they're not willing to compromise some values that they have. There are actual downsides.
To not get too far into the weeds, some of the downsides are it is an injection. There is going to be potential for pain and injection site reactions. It does increase red blood cell count more than some of the other forms of testosterone, like nasal or even the testosterone capsules you can take.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about those forms in their own episode. And it probably does drive more fluid retention than other forms of testosterone.
As long as it makes me stronger, that's a benefit, not a downside.
You just said mass moves mass.
That's true. Anyways, a few other notes. Some people ask about forms of test other than test C and test E. And you may have heard test E is for elderly because alliteration starts with an I, not an E, by the way. But test propionate, in general, not clinically useful just because it has much too fast half-life. Testosterone decanoate and undecanoate would likely be very useful, but they are not widely available in the right carrier oil for injection. So for all intents and purposes of the discussion today, we're talking about test C, which is cypionate, and test E, which is enanthate, which are completely interchangeable in my opinion.
Yeah. And then there's the, you know, the oil that it's in, sort of target levels. These are things that you're, if someone is prescribing this, they should sort of know a bit about how it's going to affect these things. So, you know, if you look at, let's pull up slide 7 there. If you're getting your testosterone from a commercial pharmacy, it's probably going to be in cottonseed oil if you're drawing it up yourself. It'll be in sesame seed oil if you're getting it as an auto injector. And if you're getting it compounded, it could be in anything. It could be in ethyl oleate. It could be in grapeseed oil. It could be in MCT oil.
Yep.
And that, for most people, probably won't be significantly different. But if you have a more narrow therapeutic index, which a lot of people do, if you think about how many million people are on some sort of injectable testosterone, some people will be affected by that. And you don't want your prescriber to be sort of scratching their head of like, well, why did that happen? We just changed the oil.
Yeah, as people can see, thicker oils like castor oil definitely have longer half-lives than thinner oils like soybean oil for the exact same medication. And a rule of thumb is the commercial or generic testosterone that's in cottonseed oil. It's a thicker oil, slightly longer half-life. GSO and MCT, and in general, compounded oils, thinner oils, so it's actually a little bit easier to draw through your syringe if you're using insulin syringes. It is an advantage that you can hold back and fill it with, maybe you only use 10 or 15 seconds instead of 20 seconds, saves you time, but the half-life will be slightly faster. So it could be the difference between injecting twice a week versus three times a week and not having too thick of blood.
Yeah, so we talked about sort of what is being done, some of the key knowledge someone should have going into thinking about getting a specifically a prescription perhaps for injectable testosterone. What should be the standard of care? What should that conversation look like? Think about like if you're talking to a patient, say, hey, we're going to get you started on some testosterone injections. How do we avoid this? This is a story I've heard so many times. I'm not the first person to tell it, but you know, well, dad got started on TRT and everything's great, but we can tell when it's wearing off because he gets cranky again.
Yeah. You should discuss the truths and the benefit and the downside. Last Just the Basics podcast, we discussed if it's really going to affect their fertility, which basically temporarily, yes, but in a long term, no, it's reversible. And you should also discuss with them how often that they will likely need to inject based off of their specific genetics and phenotype, which basically, if they have high SHBG, they probably can get by with less injections. If they have low SHBG, then they will have to inject more often, most likely. And if they're more prone to side effects, they will also likely have to inject more often. We'll explain this more in the future. But you make sure that the patient understands that. And you also make sure that the patient understands they don't necessarily have to be on for a lifetime. They can come off and recover what function they had previously, but it's a long-term commitment to get labs and to monitor your organ systems so you find the downsides before they occur. I would argue most of the downsides from testosterone replacement are not visible, like a hair loss or gynecomastia or acne. Those are the minority of the side effects.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And just because your lab panel comes back great a couple months into your testosterone injections, you actually have, I think, about 12 months is where the red cell production, red blood cell production will level off. So then you know, okay, I'm not likely to have thicker blood from this. I'm not likely to be at a higher risk, mm-hmm. assuming your dose doesn't, you know, go up and up and up and up. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing we talk about, average dosing. You know, probably something like 80 to 120 milligrams per week in two or three injections per week. Maybe somebody, like you said, with a higher sex hormone binding globulin really doesn't want to do that many injections, could get away with once a week. You could think of it as a trial period because some people, you know, testosterone is not going to make them feel better. They're not going to have a good reaction to it. They could develop a hormonally induced migraine. You know, people will ask, well, can you tell me that won't happen to me or that I won't have any side effects? You know, we can't honestly tell people that. We have to say, hey, we can monitor for side effects that you won't see, and you can let us know what positives and negatives you see in this sort of trial period. Because like you mentioned, it's very reversible. It's not something that people get tethered to forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. That's a great summary. And hopefully there's a lot of takeaways from anyone in the audience. If you do have questions, please leave them below, regardless of what platform they're on. We do plan to do a question and answer for each one of these episodes.
Yeah, tentative name is Beyond the Basics. It'll be sort of a advanced slash AMA type of episode. If you have other name suggestions, please throw those out there because this is sort of tentative. But we do really look forward to diving a bit deeper and answering some of the more advanced or esoteric questions.
As always, thank you for your time, and may God bless you with health and happiness.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.